Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join our Facebook group, the Ravenpuff Common Room, and on Instagram at the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/therambling ravenpuffs, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in. Grab your butterbeer and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Ravenpuffs.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
Today we're starting Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, beginning with chapters 1 and 2, Owlpost and Aunt Marge's Big Mistake. In these chapters, Hedwig brings Harry a little birthday cheer, and Aunt Marge is all about the eugenics.
I love how you, like, boil these chapters down to what they really are about. Well, just as a newbie to this, these two chapters, I actually didn't totally dislike the Dursley chapters, probably because, you know, there was a little bit of Ron and Hermione and, you know, wizardry in the beginning.
My first notes from the first chapter is the recap was significantly lesser, like more stuff was sprinkled in that was relevant to, like, what was going on in the moment.
Yeah, it was. And the recap felt, it didn't feel as obnoxious as the first one. The second book's recap.
Yeah, well, the first recap in the second book.
Yes, yeah, exactly. That one was tedious. This one was entertaining and fun. And maybe by this point, there's the assumption that if you haven't read the first two books, like, chances are you're not going to pick this up randomly, but even if you
or it. Unless you're like my sister who read 1, 3 and then 2.
Oh yeah, yeah, she did kind of jump around. Well, good on Holly, good for her.
But anyway, so yeah, this one was better, and Harry Potter was a highly unusual boy in many ways. For one thing, he hated the summer holidays more than any other time of year. For another, he really wanted to do his homework but was forced to do it in secret in the dead of night. And he also happened to be a wizard. Like, again, I felt like that's a good, like, recap, because it's like Harry Potter loves all the things he's typically not supposed to love. And we know it's because life at the Dursleys is hell.
Right. Yeah. And we get into just how deep that mistreatment goes. But I like that there's the assumption that he was, well, I guess, forced to do his homework in secret is one thing, in the dead of night. I mean, I think I've definitely pulled an all-nighter or two when I was in school. So that's,
I don't know, at Harry's age and sort of middle school, like, did you get homework over the holidays?
That's a great question. I was thinking about that, and I don't ever remember being assigned, like, a book to read over the summer or anything like that. Probably would have enjoyed it, but, you know, during the summer I was taking art classes, so were you ever assigned, like, homework over the holidays?
At this age, you know, I want to say I did, but I honestly can't remember, because the only way I could think of is if, like, maybe for, like, my French class, maybe I did something, because those are, like, prerequisites and, like, they like classes build off of each other.
That would make sense. And you also probably don't want to lose the progress that you've made.
Yeah, like, you know. Whereas, you know, like, in high school with math classes, one didn't necessarily precede the other, because you could go off in calculus or statistics or, you know, trigonometry. Like, there are a lot of options. Yeah, I don't know. It just, I was thinking about that, and I'm like, did I ever get saddled with summer homework? At least if I did, it was not grueling enough that I remembered it, or maybe I just blocked it out. I don't know.
Maybe we never. Well, Harry's homework is pretty interesting, and I he is writing an essay called something to do with witch burning in the 14th century was completely pointless. Discuss. And then they go on to give a little bit of backstory about the witch burnings. And I thought this was a really interesting way to kind of tackle that subject of the witch trials. It's just such a light touch. Like, it's for such a dark subject, I really liked the idea of, you know, this one witch in particular would use a flame freezing charm and then pretend to shriek with pain while enjoying a gentle tickling sensation. Because I have read about the witch trials in Europe and things like that. And then I think Salem, I've read about Salem, which nobody was burned in Salem. Some people
hanged and like thrown underwater.
Hanged and pressed to death. I think those were the two. One guy was pressed to death, Giles Corey, but the rest of them.
I hate the floating test.
That is really.
Even historical forgiveness of, you know, that it was the 17th century. No, that made no sense. Not now, not then, not ever.
I feel like the reasoning for the floating, but I feel like once upon a time I knew why they would do that, but now I don't remember. So that was a great anecdote on my part. But I do think it was really interesting that they touched upon that dark point in history and kind of looking at it from the perspective of a witch or a wizard. And, you know, I don't know. I liked that part a lot.
Yeah, so for me as a pagan / eclectic witch, like reading this and, you know, thinking about, you know, the implications of all the witch burning and people who were, again, persecuted for practicing earth-based or other indigenous, you know, forms of spirituality. I'm personally not offended by this because, again, Harry the author is, like, for the context of Harry, you know, being a specific type of wizard, if Harry is the writer, you know, then it would make sense that he would approach this subject in this way.
Yes.
If we were to go back to Harry's ghostwriter, she who must be named, if she were a, like, known practicing pagan or whatever, and still she wrote this, you know, then I maybe would have had a problem.
Just because of it makes light of it, or?
Yeah, if she were a practicing pagan and trying to make light of it and, you know, stuff like that, like, knowing the severe, again, implications of how bad it was, then I'd probably be a little more offended. But I know, again, in the scope of things, that that's not the focus, so I was okay with it.
Yeah, I think I appreciated Harry's letting us know about this just from the perspective of a wizard studying, you know, people of the time that were wizards and not wizards, and the bad times that happened for people living in that time. That is something that endlessly fascinates me, so I could probably just stop and just talk about witch trials and witches and things like that for an hour, but I will not. But we realize obviously very quickly that he is at the Dursleys' house. And this has been his, I mean, he's been there forever. But as far as his going back and forth to Hogwarts, he's been to Hogwarts twice. And this is his summer before his third year in school, right?
Yeah. And I just love the extra detail that as long as he didn't drip ink spots onto his bed sheets, then they need not ever know.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was funny.
I love how, you know, the Dursley family had a very medieval attitude towards magic. They locked up his wand, his broomstick, his books, everything in the cupboard under the stairs where they used to lock him up.
Yeah, we had some flashbacks of, or I had some flashbacks of him being locked down there with some spiders. He had some bigger experience with spiders in the last book, so.
I went through my whole spiel of why Aragog was my least favorite character, not because he's a spider, but because he was unhelpful.
Yes, exactly.
So Ron tried to help Harry out, or at least, you know, give Harry a little something to look forward to by calling the Dursleys' telephone number.
Oh, I just, like, cringed when I read this, but then I also thought it was, had to be quite funny to just see that play out, because Ron doesn't know really what the hell he's doing with the telephone, and Uncle Vernon is, of course, just, I think he just runs on the setting of angry all the time, so he was obviously annoyed that Ron was calling.
And then, I don't know, this gave me a flashback of I was always really shy as a kid when it came to the telephone.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, I guess it wasn't so much about, like, the calling itself. It was the fact that I would be scared that I wouldn't remember certain information or write certain information down, and then my parents would, like, get mad at me.
Well, that's, I feel like that's a good reason to be scared of answering the phone. I just would, my dad ran a business and I would record like goofy voice messages on the answering machine. Yes, I'm dating myself. Sometimes I would leave them on there and we'd go out of town. And, you know, my dad was also trying to run a business. So that was maybe more answering machine related.
And then it would just be interesting with how, you know, telephone etiquette developed as cell phones became more advanced, you know. Because it would get to a point where, like, businesses had so many websites or people that you could Google things. And so there'd be points where I would not specifically ask for a telephone number. And my dad would get mad, like, why didn't you ask for the telephone number, Amy? God, Jesus Christ. And I'm like, Dad, Google it. It ain't that hard.
I guess this is where like our age difference shows, because my remembering of taking phone messages down would be like, if I forgot something, it was just totally, I would be, you know, scrambling through a phone book. There was no Googling at it at the time that I'm remembering the last time I think I had a landline. So I'm a geriatric millennial. It's all good. That's what they say, geriatric millennials.
Yeah. And then how dare you give this number to people like you?
What the heck? I thought that, I mean, that was incredibly rude of Uncle Vernon. Not that I expect a lot from him, but that was pretty bad. So there it has a attempt has been made by his friends to contact him, though I do think it a bit foolish that he gave out his phone number, you know, because we kind of knew what the reaction at the Dursleys would be. So why do you think he gave his phone number out to Ron and Hermione? Do you think it was just a safety measure?
Well, Hermione definitely would have known how to use a telephone.
Yes.
So he could have trusted her. And I think with Ron, he was trusting that Mr. Weasley, who's so fascinated by muggles, would know enough to be like, don't shout, Ron.
Right.
Interesting. And again, Harry gave the telephone number to him in the last chapter of the last book, not knowing that Vernon would finally relent and let Hedwig fly at night.
That's a good point. That's a good point. And I'm glad Hedwig gets to fly at
night.
Yeah,
like that definitely my note is hashtag save Hedwig.
Yes. Poor Hedwig. Yes. But she's good. She's flying around this time and she's able to bring him some presents.
Yeah. But before we get into the presents, I'm just thinking, I asked if you had homework over the summer, but did you ever read any books in secret that your parents didn't know about, like Harry is doing?
Oh, good question. Never in secret. I think it always just was like a good thing that I was reading. It's funny that you mention a book that I wasn't like a scandalous reader. I know back in the day, people would read like, I think Judy Blume books were the thing that people would kind of like hide. I never read anything.
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. Yeah. Again, this is, I think it's like, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. It was just stuff about like, growing up, I never really was interested in that. I do remember reading The Talented Mr. Ripley and being very disturbed by it because I think I was a little too young to read that book. But did you read in secret books?
Do not think so. There were certain films that I watched behind my parents' back.
Okay.
And I remember watching The Mummy, you know, and my dad thought I was too young for it. And I'm just like, meh.
The Brendan Fraser one? The modern one?
Yeah, like the 99 one where Otep and whoever the hell he is.
Okay. I just didn't know if you meant like the Universal Monster one, like the black and white one.
Yeah, because my reading level was pretty high for my age. And so, but my parents never said, no, you can't read this book or that book either. Either they trusted me to handle it or I never asked for a book that they thought would be questionable. I don't know. It just makes me think about, I think I told you, I just very recently finished A Court of Silver Flames, like the fourth ACOTAR book.
Yeah.
And that book again, it's so sexually explicit, like soft porn, like even, and not even just soft porn at certain points, that I do not understand how that is rated YA.
I didn't. Okay, so this series, I know everybody's tells me it's like sexy times, but I guess I didn't realize how deep that went.
Yeah. Interesting. And I don't know. It's like, I am all for moving towards a sex positive culture, because I think the taboo we put around sex just makes things 100 times more worse.
I agree.
But even still, I think you need to, for that, there needs to be a subcategory between like young adult and then like actual like 18, like 17, 18 young adult.
Like things are going to get a little more intense.
I would be okay with like a 16-year-old reading that. I wouldn't be okay with like a 13-year-old reading that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is the thing about reading. Like you can kind of, I know a lot of people would read a book and it's just kind of like, well, you're reading. It doesn't really matter. But I thankfully, I guess, to my parents' credit, I was never told not to read anything. And I read Carrie pretty young by Stephen King. That was one of the books that I maybe wish my parents would have said, like, hey, don't read that. But nothing too sexually explicit. I guess I was like more going for the scary. But now I really want to read that book series because I'm very curious. So
I digress. But it's just interesting, the notion of secret reading.
Yeah, secret reading. I like it. Sounds fun.
Yeah. But Harry, he finishes up his essay writing about Wendelin the Weird. I love these names.
Yes, that's awesome.
And he takes a look at the clock and it's 1 in the morning, meaning that it is his, he's been 13 years old for a whole hour.
13 too. Like that's pretty exciting. He's a teenager now, so.
Was 13 a big time for you, like officially getting into your teens?
16 was a bigger deal than 13 for some reason. Oh, I think
sweet 16. Yeah. My sweet 16 sucked.
You know, I didn't, that wasn't like much of a thing back when, back in the day. I just, my friends were just ornery. So they were basically reading the books they shouldn't be reading. That was kind of, so they had some great ideas about what being 16 meant. But I don't really remember turning 13 very vividly. I was just kind of like, okay, well, now I can't drive yet. I can't do any of these other things. But was 13 a big deal for you?
I don't think so. It just makes me, just in general, think about my father would always say that ever since I was 10, I basically wanted to be treated like an adult.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And so I'm sure that when I got 13, it's like, okay, I'm officially a teenager now, so I should have been treated as if I was 21.
Nothing wrong with that. I think that's good. I that does not surprise me at all. That's awesome. That's great.
But so again, Harry's thinking, well, you know, the Dursleys aren't going to do crap for my birthday. But who is to show up but three owls?
Three, one, you know, kind of busted up owl. One's Hedwig. And then one is a very regal, what color?
Vigil school owl.
Yeah. So first of all, that would be pretty awesome to have three owls carrying some gifts to you. That's something that I would like to see sometime.
And also we get classism via owls.
We do, don't we? Yeah.
Because just thinking about poor, decrepit, on his last legs, Errol, which belongs to the Weasleys, who should be retired, but they probably can't afford to get a younger owl.
Right. I kind of wonder, like, what do they do if he just kind of like keels over mid-flight and their stuff doesn't get to them? I don't know. That's a sad thought.
Yeah. It's not the greatest. And then we get Harry and Hedwig, who is, I guess, I don't know, middle class, upper middle class. And then we have like an organization's like official owl. So it's like the best owl.
Yeah. A handsome tawny. Well, that's cool. They are delivering some good stuff, even though Errol's having a hard time with it. But he's
although finally... Harry is very sweet and puts him in Hedwig's cage to drink some water.
That was very nice of him to help him out. But
so who's carrying what? So we've got from Errol. It's the clipping that shows. What'd you think of this? That the Weasleys won the lottery, basically.
I thought it was very sweet that, and shows kind of where their values are, that they took the money that they won and traveled to visit their son. I thought that was like a really, I just feel like, you know, that was very on brand for the Weasleys. And also I was very, very grateful that Ron will be getting a new wand because he needs one desperately. So
I felt a bit of a way about this because I myself have been to Egypt, and this is not the first time I've read the book since being in Egypt, but I just felt a way about it because, again, my Egyptian experience was not the greatest because President Morsi was ousted by the military and I had to evacuate.
Well, that is a very, that is not a, yeah, that's a much different experience than the Weasleys had. But you're safe.
But I do remember going, you know, to the pyramids and going into some of the, you know, tombs that are like antechambers and, you know, things like that. So I can kind of visualize all of what, you know, Ron and the family is experiencing. But there were no mutinous skeletons with extra heads.
That is unfortunate. Not really. That would be quite. Yeah,
and I thought it was with Harry's or Ron's letter. You know, Ron admits that mom wouldn't let Ginny go into the last one. That is sexist.
That is a little sexist. And
especially after crazy Tom Riddle ghost diary, I think Ginny could handle a few skeletons.
I agree 100%. I did think it was a bit surprising all the things that they had been through and they've seen. And they were like, no, no, you can't come see these mutant skeletons. It's like, she'll be fine. She's seen a lot of stuff.
Did he bring a gift? What was Ron's gift to Harry? Oh, it was the sneakoscope.
Yes. Which,
do you wish you had a sneakoscope?
I don't know. So it's basically a lie detector, right?
Not necessarily a lie detector. It's more a BS detector.
Okay. Yeah. Well, mine would constantly be red because of,
The way my life is right now. Mine would also be red constantly, yeah. And I wouldn't know who's from what.
Right, exactly. I feel like if I had one, I would be like, well, I also know this. But I think it was gross that there were beetles in Bill. Bill, that's who's there. Bill's soup. But wouldn't hurt to have. Like, if somebody gave me one, I'd be like, okay, thanks. And
here's the real question. Would you prefer, or is it any better or less than... Yeah, sneakoscope versus the Remembrall.
I would like, well, the Remembrall, and I remember having talked about this with Amanda.
Extensively with Amanda because yes. She hates it so goddamn she much. She
hates it. Man, that's a hard one because they're both like fine magical objects, but one doesn't really...
Well, to me, they're kind of the same because they're both objects that don't give you all the information just enough to bring your anxiety and blood pressure up.
Right. I don't need anything to help me with that. I guess like that's a great point. If I had the either one of those, I would be like, it would probably be worse for me. So I think I would probably have to hide it and only break out the sneakoscope in very dire situations. So is there one that you would prefer? Let's say if you had to, like somebody was like, you have to take one of these. Which one would you?
Probably the sneakoscope because I am pretty good at like remembering data and memory and stuff, so I prefer just to the BS detector.
That is that's the only benefit. If the Remember All could help you, you know, actually remember things, then I would be like, hands down, that's what I would choose. But basically it's just telling you forgot something, but not really the thing anyway.
And the next gift is just as much from Hedwig as it is from Hermione, because Hedwig took it upon herself to fly all the way to France to find Hermione so that she could give him Harry's birthday present.
I thought that's very cute and caring of Hedwig, helping make sure he gets some presents. So I'm trying to remember what...
Yeah, so Hermione, you think she's going to give him a book, but instead he's got... Or what he does, it's all about Quidditch, though.
Quidditch, and then it's the broom polishing kit. Or
yeah, it's a whole broom polishing kit that includes a little handbook of do-it-yourself broom care.
And he's pretty psyched about this. I think about people with like car care kits or something that are real into their car.
Or motorcycles or whatever.
Yeah. So that was a very like slight deviation for Hermione, but it was good. I liked her gift. I liked Hagrid's the best, even though it was kind of curious.
Yeah, the crab spider book.
Yeah.
What'd you think of that?
So yeah, Hagrid obviously he gives him a book. It's the Monster Book of Monsters, and he kind of gives him an ominous message too that says you'll need this next year, but he can't really give any details. I did like that they mentioned Hagrid didn't have a normal person's view of what was dangerous. Hagrid hadn't been known to befriend giant spiders, buy vicious three-headed dogs from men in pubs, and sneak illegal dragon eggs into his cabin. And I thought that was a good way to describe Hagrid. He didn't have a normal person's view of what was dangerous, kind of at the trio's expense sometimes. But I wouldn't object to a book of monsters, even though it is kind of a creepy, you know, moving book.
I have seen on like Potter like websites and Facebook groups, like there are some people who have made these really extensive cakes that is the Monster Book of Monsters.
Ooh. I'll have to check those out. That sounds cool.
So, but throughout all of this, I don't know if it was before or after, but Harry was anticipating Hedwig coming back with a mouse seeking praise for her kill. And I'm thinking, what is Hedwig now a cat?
I know. I thought that was weird too. I was like, well, I guess that's nice, but.
Do they do that? If they're like semi-domesticated, do they genuinely exhibit that behavior?
I will have to. I know somebody whose brother works with birds of prey. I'll have to ask because that's strange.
And then finally, the last letter is not a present. It is a notice from McGonagall. Please note that the new school year will begin on September the 1st. Hogwarts Express release, yada, yada, yada. Most important thing, third years are permitted to visit the village of Hogsmeade on certain weekends. Please give the enclosed permission form to your parent or guardian to sign. The list of books for your next year is enclosed. So now we've got permission slips. Does this go back to childhood?
Yes. And I guess this is where Harry and I differ, because I never really had a problem with my parents signing a permission slip. But in this book, with Harry's telling this story, I just kind of cringed. It was like, oh, Hogsmeade, what's that? Oh, God, he has to have a permission slip signed. That's not going to end well. But does it evoke some memories for you?
Well, the only permission slip that my dad refused to sign was for this middle school ski trip.
Oh, what?
He refused to sign it because basically he did not trust them to watch over us, and basically his assumption that skiing is a very dangerous sport, which yes, it can be. Like, who is that that famous actress, Liam Nelson's wife? She died in a skiing accident.
Oh yeah. Oh,
so my gosh. Yes, it is a dangerous sport. I will admit, but from my head, I was just thinking, I ride horses every weekend. That is one of the most dangerous sports you can get.
I have never been skiing, and I also realized that you grew up in a part of the country where that was probably more easily accessible than it was for me. So
yeah, so it wasn't so much that not thinking that skiing could be dangerous, it could be, but I think it was, you know, showing that, you know, I'll do another, you know, extreme sports that have left people paralyzed and other all sorts of other crap.
Yeah,
but so to me, it was just kind of weird. And I think it really showed of how much my dad just didn't trust the adults at the school. And basically, and on just general, like in the area, because culturally, we just didn't fit in Southern Oregon.
Mm. Oh, okay.
You know, because Oregon is a blue state, but where we lived in Southern Oregon in near the California border, that's like state of Jefferson territory. That is very quote-unquote redneck, and to the point that now it's one of a big hot spot for COVID still, because people can't get their shit together.
Oh wow, I didn't know that.
Partly it was just kind of weird, and I'm like, I do dangerous sports all the time, and secondly, I don't trust these yahoos in Southern Oregon.
Can't blame anybody. I was never invited to do anything like that. I'm thinking it was like a trip to the state capitol and to go look at Fabergé eggs or something like that. I mean,
I want to do that.
It was pretty awesome. I'm not going to lie. It was really interesting.
Yeah, because one of my highlights of the Smithsonian, like going to see the Hope Diamond.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so Harry's just thinking, like, I don't know how I'm going to get this permission form signed, but he's just so happy that he gets to, you know, put his little birthday cards on display and go to bed knowing that he got some presents.
I was happy for him because it said it for the first time in his life, it was that it felt like his birthday. And I thought, man, what a bummer. The kid's the 13 and now he finally, but good. I'm glad we got to 13 and, you know, actually got to have some feeling of a birthday.
And then we're at chapter 2, Aunt Marge's big mistake.
The artwork is a little much. That's okay. In the beginning of the chapter that we talked about kind of the, what do we call it? Body shaming in related to the
Dursleys. Very, very much so still with Dudley and Vernon and by extension, Aunt Marge.
Yeah. But so, she's a real not nice person.
I thought you were going to get a little more creative than that.
I was, but then I restrained myself. So.
But before Aunt Marge comes, we get a notice that even the Muggles are on that lookout for Sirius Black.
Yeah, not a lot that, you know, in this part, we just get the notice that his name is Black. And then, but kind of no other information yet that other than Uncle Vernon and Aunt Petunia wanting to bring back public execution, which is ridiculous, but yeah. That's just kind of
rule. And Vernon's like, no need to tell us he's no good. Look at the state of him, the filthy layabout. Look at his hair. He was in prison. What do you think he's gonna be polished, like about to go to a job interview?
I guess that's pretty. The commentary from the Dursleys on this news story was a little ridiculous, but also I guess they're just trying to make themselves feel better. I don't know. It was strange.
I don't know. It just made me feel a certain way about, again, obviously it's an exaggeration, or maybe not, because again, Harry's writing this. Maybe how much did his childhood self exaggerate this? But the idea that the Dursleys represent that whole, everything that happens to you is your fault, like pull yourself by your bootstraps. There's no institutionalized racism holding you back, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. They're very much of that class of people and pretty proud of it and very self-conscious of that. They always want to make sure they're at least perceived that way. I thought there was a point specifically in this chapter that I remember thinking that was very much some self-conscious people's reaction to things. I'm trying to find where it was. But the conversation eventually turns to Aunt Marge, Uncle Vernon's sister coming to visit, and Harry's reaction is strong because there's a history of Aunt Marge apparently being almost worse to him than the Dursleys are. I mean, she just was apparently whacking him around the shins with her walking stick to stop him from beating Dudley at musical statues. I don't know what that is, but
I'm guessing that's something akin to musical chairs.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, like, it's just kind of the question of, yeah, Aunt Marge is worse, but at the same time, Aunt Marge is away, and so when she comes to visit, like, can you truly maintain the energy and emotional labor that's involved in continually abusing a child the way Aunt Marge does? Or would the Dursleys be that way if they could maintain that level? Like, I'm just thinking that's a lot of work.
That's what I thought, too. I'm so glad you pointed it out, because I was like, this lady, like, needs to back off, or why is she so unrelenting? I know, and granted, we're getting, you know, one perspective of the story, but even that, I'm sure there's some truth to it. And she just does not let anything go. You know, Harry, it obviously gets to Harry, but we're not that far yet. But I had the same question as well, like keeping that level of hatred up, then, you know, it just makes me want to go, what happened to you, Aunt Marge? What's going on? Because she's got some problems.
And Harry gets to look forward to Marge being there for an entire week.
Yeah. Ugh. Awful.
Vernon looks at Harry and is like, we need to get a few things straight before I go and collect her. So ultimately, Uncle Vernon has sold this story that Harry is basically at this reform school. St. Brutus's Secure Center for Incurably Criminal Boys.
Oh my God. So ridiculous. He just turned 13 and they're like trying to say that he's this much of like a bad seed. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. This whole thing just got me think of, there's this whole like troubled teen industry where there are like these camp-like programs that are supposed to instill like discipline and stuff and reform and stuff, but they're not quote unquote licensed officially. Like, there's been a lot of horror stories apparently of, you know, kids that were being rebellious to a dangerous degree and the parents didn't know what else to do. And so they sent them to these like reform camps or lodges or programs or whatever. And the kids come out of it and they're just even more traumatized because they were abused.
Yeah, I know. I just watched something about that recently. And then, you know, Paris Hilton has come out and said she went to one of those schools and they're basically abusing the kids who and selling to their parents that they're giving them more structure and kind of helping, like you said, reform them, which I guess my approach to things like that in life is much different than anybody involved in these both scenarios. But I think that I guess that could be my question for later. Never mind, I'm going to save it.
Okay. And so Harry's thinking about this and he's like, okay, this week is going to suck for me, but maybe I can use it to my advantage. And so in essence, he tries to bargain with Vernon that I will stick to this story and do everything that you want if you sign my permission slip.
I admired Harry's forward thinking, and then I was a little jealous because I don't think I would have come up with this when I was 13. But then I also was a little disappointed because what they negotiate is if he stays like on his best behavior in accordance to the Dursleys, then they would sign the form. And I'm just like thinking, given their history, they're not going to sign the stupid form. So
what I would have done in Harry's case is I will be like, okay, I will do it. And you will sign it the night or the day before she leaves, you know, so that there's still one opportunity that it to make true on his threat if they don't sign it.
Right. Yeah, that would have been a better way to play it. Because, I mean.
And, you know, you get to that point where, you know, they're going to threaten bodily harm. And it's like, you know, beating me up is not going to change what I could tell Aunt Marge.
Right. He could kind of blow the lid off this, his situation. And
which again, makes me think about what is the legality of telling muggles about magic? Like, again, how far does that network extend? Like, could Harry actually do that? Would it be not considered like a breaking of the statute of secrecy or whatever because Vernon knows magic? Like, is it okay as his sister that Marge also know about this and that they choose not to tell her? Like, again, I got really going deep in the rabbit hole of what would be the legality and ramifications of that if he told her, hey, I'm a wizard.
Yeah, that's a good, those are good things to think about because we don't get a lot of answers to that, at least so far. As far as what the legality is. And I have thought about that as well, because obviously, you know, like Hermione has muggle parents and just obviously she talks to them about her life.
Yeah.
And
but does she have aunts? Does she have cousins? Right. Could she technically tell them? I don't know.
We don't know. I don't know either. I would like to know. We need some like Harry Potter rules that have been, I'm sure it's out there. The rule book of living as a wizard in the muggling world, or muggle world.
And thus arrives Aunt Marge.
She comes pretty quickly. They have this conversation, then all of a sudden she's there and basically immediately just going in on Harry about his hair that he can't do anything about in the door. And she just kind of is all over him and then, you know, wants to pour admiration on Dudley. But yeah, this is kind of like her beginning of like, let's just totally rag on Harry nonstop.
Then like Harry, like, again, she is already out of the gate. Like, so still here, are you? Yes, said Harry. Don't you say yes in that ungrateful tone. Like, he just answered her question.
Right. 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 He can't do anything right. It's like the one of those people that you just can't do anything right. And that is who Harry is to Amar.
Yeah. And then he's like, I won't have this namby-pamby wishy-washy nonsense about not hitting people who deserve it.
Yeah. She's real excited about making sure they're beating on Harry at his school.
A good thrashing is what's needed in 99 cases out of 100. Have you been beaten often? Oh, yeah, said Harry. Loads of times. I still don't like your tone, boy, she said. If you could speak of your beatings in that casual way, then they clearly aren't hitting you hard enough. Petunia, I'd write if I were you.
And again, ridiculous. And maybe she should write. Like, what a ridiculous thing to get in a tizzy about. But whatever. She and her bulldogs seem pretty amped to cause physical harm to people.
And things don't get better. And as I said, Aunt Marge and her eugenic philosophy.
Yeah, yeah. So, but never mind. I was about to ask a question. I already knew the answer.
No, it's just like the one of the most egregious phrases. It's one of the basic rules of breeding, she said. You see it all the time with dogs. If there's something wrong with the bitch, there'll be something wrong with the pup.
Yeah, and then she talks about drowning one of her little dogs, which is very upsetting to me. Yes, and that is it also reminds me of Mexican Gothic and their kind of conversation about the family there and just different skin tone, things like that.
And Harry got so mad at this that it's kind of left ambiguous whether Harry did it or not of the wine glass breaking in her hand.
She definitely tries to like write it off and say that, oh, I did that last week or I did that the other day. It's no big deal. Like, because I think that from her perspective, it not knowing anything about Harry and maybe he did or didn't do it is there's an insinuation that Petunia has like cheap glasses that easily break. So she's trying to make Petunia feel better.
Possibly. I didn't even think about it from that angle.
Oh, no.
But and then it's the final evening of Marge's stay, which again, I, after having some time to think about it, I would have had Uncle Vernon sign that permission slip before dinner.
And I think that would have been the best way to go about it. But the way what transpires is quite dramatic here at the end. And I think you would have been good to do that because he almost says something, but instead.
Well, he's,
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, no, he says something in the sense that, you know, the whole he hasn't admitted to magic or anything, but he is breaking the narrative that his parents died in a car crash.
Yeah, because she, Aunt Marge is insulting them and that's, you know, obviously somebody's going to be sensitive about that.
It all comes down to blood. As I was saying the other day, bad blood will out. Now, I'm not saying nothing against your family, Petunia. She patted Aunt Petunia's bony hand with her shovel-like one. But your sister was a bad egg. They turn up in the best of families. Then she ran off with that rastrel. And then here's the result right in front of us.
I love how Harry is trying to, like, calm himself down by thinking about Quidditch and care for his broom. I thought that was a very mature way to handle something that was upsetting because I think that's advice that people give you, you know, like just think of something happy or think of something just completely, you know, dull and to kind of get your mind out of a situation. And I just wanted to say good job, Harry, for at least attempting to kind of keep a level head.
Because, yeah, I'm at a point with my whole frustrations with work where I have to get up and walk away. Like, you know, the only thing that can sort of take me out of it is, you know, reading super epic fantasy. So in this case, you know, Game of Thrones, more specifically the prequel with the Targaryen. Mm-hmm. So I'm just reading about, you know, war, death and blood and incest.
If that takes your mind off of it, I think that I had to do that last week. I'm just like, I just need to read something that's just totally not this. And then, of course, it kind of took a turn where I was like, oh, God, we got all kinds of craziness. So I need to go back into the fantasy land instead of domestic thriller land.
Yeah, because there are many domestic thrillers that I need to read. And technically, I've, you know, have the audiobooks like on Libby, but I just like, it doesn't do it. Like, I need super hardcore fantasy. I need to completely remove myself.
I think that's perfect. You're like thinking like Harry and cleaning up his broom, and you're applying. I think that's a good strategy. You and Harry made wise decisions.
And Uncle Vernon goes on to say, like, well, Aunt Marge asks, what did the boy's father do? And it says he was unemployed. As I expected. A no account, good for nothing, lazy scoundrel who he was not, said Harry suddenly.
Again, why is she going in so hard on his family? Like, I'm...
We can only presume that Marge and Vernon come from a family where weakness is despised, social standing is everything, and they're so insecure about their own social standing that they need to point out how much better they are in relation to someone else being so bad.
Hey, that's just very cruel. And I don't blame Harry for flipping out at this point.
And at first they don't realize what's happening because Aunt Marge is like screaming at him and is just, you know, swelling on her own accord. And then finally it kicks in that she's legitimately blowing up like a balloon.
Kind of serves her right. I don't know what happens after this, but you know, she was accusing Harry's parents of being drunk drivers. She's making all these horrible accusations, but this also, which I thought this was a nice change, Harry just decides at this point, because we don't see that he like caused this curse or anything or to make her blow up, but he just basically bolts from the dining room and grabs his stuff. And
because the door has exploded.
Yes, the door has exploded. And he's just like, I'm getting the hell out of here. So he grabs all of his things. A little curious about the his trunk. But anyway, he takes off.
Yeah, teenage runaway on his first day of being 13. or a week after being 13.
Honestly, it surprised me because I'm like, where are you going to go, bud? And that was the end of the chapter.
Thus concludes chapter 2.
I have to say that these two chapters I enjoyed more than the first two chapters of the other two books. I guess, you know, with Harry getting older and that.
Yeah, and Harry helped. As a writer does better in weaving in, like, even though he's at the Dursleys, we get some exposition of what's going on in the wizarding world as well.
Yes, we do.
So it's not just like, oh, woe is me, I'm back at the Dursleys. It's like we get, you know, Ron going to Egypt, Hermione's in France, like, what is everyone doing?
Right, so we get some of that wizarding world instead of just a sad summer with you know, the Dursleys. So I enjoyed that.
Shall we continue with Gothic Geek Out?
Yes.
So what was your Gothic thing you honed in on?
I thought about the, oh gosh, I'm sorry. Now I forgot his name. Wendolin the Weird and the discussion of the witch trials. Just kind of that element going back into the mentioning of medieval things and whatnot. I thought that was kind of the most Gothic element that I could pull from these two chapters. Usually it's pretty hard to find the Gothic elements in the Dursley chapters, but...
I'm glad you said that because that makes me think of one of the big tenets of Gothic literature is Nathaniel Hawthorne's House of the Seven Gables.
Yeah.
And the legend of that house... The House of the Seven Gables, it's sort of kind of local legend that it's cursed because basically it belonged to this one guy and a guy wanted to buy it, but he wouldn't sell it. And so basically the would-be buyer basically framed the original owner for witchcraft.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
And so after the original owner was executed, it says that he cursed the house. And so that family is always cursed because they took it from its original owner in a really, you know, criminal, duplicitous fashion. So it just made me think of all that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That all very Gothic themes. What did gothic theme did you pull?
My gothic theme was the evil aunt, Aunt Marge.
Oh my gosh, that was, I feel like an idiot right now. I can't believe that's such a gothic thing right there.
Yeah, and so it's not even, you know, it's not enough for Harry to have one crappy aunt and uncle. He gets to have another one.
Why the hell not? Just pile on poor Harry. But that is so, such a good gothic element. I'm thinking about Jane Eyre. I'm at a loss, but just those evil aunts, they show up all the time.
And yeah, and it makes me wonder about, again, curious about Petunia's relationship with her sister, because it's not that Petunia is like blameless or in any way, shape, or form. Like, it does seem that Dudley and Vernon take the initiative with the bullying of Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not to be like, not like in the last book, she was prepared to hit him with a frying pan.
Right. She was taking it to the next level.
But in terms of like, from what we see in terms of frequency, it tends to be Vernon and Dudley instigating that sort of stuff, and she just going along, not saying anything and being complicit with it. And so it just makes me think of, you know, if maybe Petunia had been married to maybe someone a little more nicer, mm-hmm. would Petunia have been capable of, you know, being nicer to Harry? Because, like, there is something to say about, as horrible as she treats Harry, she didn't say, no, I'm not taking him.
Right. There is always that element hanging over this family dynamic. And I think I understand what you're saying. Like, I know couples where you can kind of see the stronger personality kind of, that you see the couple and you think, oh, if this person would have married somebody else, I bet they would have their better traits, like, demonstrated. But this individual brings out that other part of the couple's negative traits. So I don't know anything about Vernon and Petunia's romance. I personally don't really want to read about it. But there's some fanfic that somebody can write. Oh,
yeah, so for me, it makes me wonder, like, how much of that is, you know, her taking the sort of blood relation she has to Harry seriously, whereas Aunt Marge, because she has literally no blood relation to him, she has no auspices about, you know, completely hammering in what a piece of shit he is.
That's just so weird to me. I mean, I'm an aunt, and I just would never. That, you know, even if that's what I thought, I wouldn't treat a child like that, but maybe that's just because I'm not as big of an asshole.
But yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, because I've seen the same. I saw one like sort of middle-aged couple that I met in my career thus far. The wife was so nice and I liked her because she was so curious about other cultures and everything. But her husband was the biggest asshole that I've encountered in Indiana thus far.
Oh, wow. Man.
And I'm just like, how are these two married?
Was he just like, I don't know.
He had a really big ego and didn't care about it, had no regard for anyone. Like, just, it was just, again, it's one thing if one is bad and the other is complicit. That would make more sense. But the fact that you would think if someone was so, quote unquote, nice that they would challenge, like, why are you being such an asshole? Don't do that.
Right. Yeah. You always wonder about those relationships, especially.
Anyway, but yeah, but they do happen.
They do. That they do.
Alrighty then. And now it is time for tarot card of the day.
Yeah.
I'm shuffling. Already picked that card. Can't use it again.
Oh no.
That's the first time it's happened to thus far. Oh, card number one in the major arcana, the Magician.
Probably the most spot on in the tarot, knowing nothing about tarot that thus far, I'm guessing.
So what I understand, I don't have them all memorized, but I know the Magician has a lot to do with creativity.
Mm.
And let me get some further description. Let us see. As a master manifester, the Magician, I don't care, you goddamn you stupid internet ads.
Funny.
As a master manifesto, the magician brings you the tools, resources, and energy you need to make your dreams come true. Seriously, everything you need right now is at your fingertips. You have this spiritual fire, physical earth, mental air, and emotional water resources to manifest your desires. And when you combine them with the energy of the spiritual and the earthly realms, you will become a manifestation powerhouse. The key is to bring these tools together synergistically. It's from synergy. I've never had synergy transformed into an adverb like that.
I don't know if I synergistically.
Yeah. So okay. That the impact of what you create is greater than the separate parts. This is alchemy at its best. Now is the perfect time to move forward on an idea that you recently conceived. The seed of potential has sprouted and you are being called to take action and bring your intention into fruition. So.
Harry moved forward on getting the fuck out of the Dursley's house. I think that would be something he moved forward on. And God love him for it, because that was a hellhole. But
manifesting his goals, like, again, to me, again, the whole focus is on Marge and, you know, her blowing up. But I think it's something to be said that the, you know, he was carefully, like, picking the lock to get his school books. And, like, he walks in the hallway and the door just bursts open.
Right.
He is exuding so much magic at this point.
Is that something that they talk about that's kind of later on? Because he doesn't really... He wasn't trying to do it. It wasn't like he was doing a spell. No,
he wasn't cognizantly trying to do it, but his emotions were stuff that's what he wanted. And so his magic's like, oh, burst the door open because I want my shit and I want to go.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, this description is heavy on manifestation. So yeah, Harry manifesting the circumstances needed to reach his goals, which is getting out of there.
Getting out of there, yeah. And I guess they were talking about everything he needed to achieve that, and how poetic it was inside him. It wasn't, you know, all of his stuff that he had. The door burst open and he got out of there. So good. I'm so grateful.
Yeah, no. Oh, I like this paragraph. In your quest to manifest your goals, you must establish a clear vision of what you will create and why before you act. It's not enough to be motivated by ego, money, status, or fame. You need to have a soul connection to your goals and intentions. You are a powerful, creative being, and this is your opportunity to bring your higher self into alignment with your day-to-day actions and create the future you want most. So I think that's telling, because it kind of, again, with Harry showing his magical ability, he cannot perform wandless magic in this world just on a whim that I want to. Like, there has to be something really, really serious, like emotion, fueling it for him to get to that level.
Right. I think it was a great card. I feel like if we pulled the magician at any time, or you pulled the magician, it would, we could find it, of course, just like on the surface, it seems pretty much like a guaranteed Harry Potter card, but this is a good chapter for it to have happen.
There actually is a zero card in tarot, you know, called the Fool, and that's supposed to be all the naive, you know, person starting his journey. And then the next card, number one, the magician, is all about, like, you know, taking the next step in that journey. What are you doing to actualize the next step in your journey?
Interesting. I didn't know that there was a zero card. I knew that the Fool was the card, but I didn't know that was a zero.
All righty then. And then now we can do a rune of the day. Okay. I've got one, and it's a line with two diagonal lines veering down it, so it kind of looks like a lopsided F. This rune is known as Ansuz, and translation, a god, ancestral god, something sometimes interpreted as Odin. Keywords are communication, wisdom, divine power, a message. Ansuz is the rune of communication in all of its form, but chiefly verbal communication, whether it involves writing, speaking, or even singing. Messages, advice, or new information may be coming from external sources, or you may be being asked to pay close attention to the messages coming from your higher self. If you draw a news in a reading related to educational studies or a job interview, this is generally a good omen. This rune also refers to knowledge, reason, and wisdom. So, there's lots of communication going on in this chapter, in chapter 2, though I can't say it's very positive.
Yeah. That's, there is a lot of communication going on, and it's mainly like yelling, even by his friends. But I guess the positive communication would be the letters that he gets from Hogwarts and the birthday messages. So there's a little bit of positive there.
Yeah, but, and yeah, I should pay more attention to that because the whole chapter is Owl Post.
The Owl Post chapter was full of positive, good positive energy. So then we could move on to the next chapter, which was shouting and degradation, I guess.
In addition to mundane messages and knowledge, Ensuz is also concerned with divine wisdom and communication with the higher planes. Sacred to Odin, often called the god of wind and spirit, Ensuz hints at the potential for prophecies, revelations, or other messages from your allies in the other world. Again, the best way I interpret that for this, I don't know how deep we want to go into religion in Harry Potter, you know, just, you know, going into the higher being or whatever, higher self, if we take mm-hmm. a pantheistic view of Harry, like, summoning his power of, I need my power, magical power, right now, and give it to me.
Yeah, that's the one interpretation of that rune that I'm, I guess, or that interpretation of it, I'm struggling with finding that in this chapter, other than, like you said, if we're applying it to his like drawing down some energy from a higher power. I don't know.
All right, then. But yeah, those were good cards and runes for the day.
I think so too.
So now we move on to fan fiction time.
Well, before it just falls out of my head completely, I was thinking about Harry and what if he had not gotten to Hogwarts, do you think they would have put him in some sort of correctional school for boys? I know they intended to send him to like the kind of lesser than...
Like they were going to send him to the public school. I guess right. It depends. Like maybe it's possible. Part of the whole St. Brutus's Correction Center for Incurably Criminal Boy, I can't remember.
Right.
Part of it is to, again, degrade Harry to say that he's not normal or that he's a delinquent. But part of it is also to explain why he is not in the local public school system.
Okay. I just, like, I wonder if there would be a point where they would try to push him to that. And I almost think that he could probably get in there pretty easily if he kept losing his temper and these weird things were happening. I know when he was at school, like with, you know, in the Muggle world, there were a couple instances that it was suspicious with him around. So that would be my fan fiction, is what would happen if, let's just say that he did, like, I guess we wouldn't be reading Harry Potter and the, like, you know, his, I'm going to back off that. That would maybe equally as interesting, a wizard, a very powerful wizard in a school that.
A correction facility?
In a correctional facility. Yeah, why not? I don't really want to read that because that sounds very dark and sad. But
that reminds me of, I have very little knowledge of it, but I think that's like the premise of that whole series, Shatter Me.
Oh, I don't know this.
I need to read it at some point, haven't gone around to it, but I think a premise is something similar where, again, basically certain people have magical powers and they've kind of responded to it by like rounding them up.
Interesting.
I'm sure I'm talking about a lot of book series because that's a pretty solid premise for how human nature treats different things.
Right. Yeah. Like
the strange, X-Men, if you will.
Yeah. What about you? What was your fan fiction?
My fan fiction is, what if Harry did not cause Aunt March to swell or cause something else to happen?
Do you think that then Uncle Vernon would have signed the note to Hogsmeade? Because that's kind of stressing me out that I don't know what is going to happen there. Do you think things would have just gone well and he would have like continued to deal with the abuse and then they would have signed the letter and gone on their merry way? Because I don't think that's
I think maybe if they had gotten them to sign the letter, they would have at least assisted him in leaving the room and wouldn't have let Marge force him. Like, Marge was insisting that he stay. And I think if he got the form signed, that, you know, he could have just, you know, maybe that could have calmed him down enough, but I don't know, what she was saying was pretty atrocious.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also, I'm starting to think of, what if, like, he had something catch fire?
Whoa.
And number four, Purgeyes just goes up in flames like every other gothic story we read.
As long as he got out of there, I mean, I don't want to, it sounds horrible that I'm like, as long as Harry was okay, that's all I care about. That's awful. But that would have, like, then maybe people would be more apt to consider Harry Potter a gothic series if we had the house burned down. I don't know. But I guess I wonder what the repercussions of that would be in the wizarding world. Like,
because the big question is Harry's not using his wand.
Right.
He's like, how are they going to interpret whether whatever action, big or small, that is wandless magic? How is the ministry going to, like, perceive that?
That, I don't know. It brings up some good questions, because I guess, you know, as far as Harry goes in the Dursleys' world, not a lot of people know that he even exists. So in the Muggle world, he probably could just, you know, run off and never be heard from again. But then the magic part complicates things in the other world. It's weird that he's just kind of having to play right now two sets of rules, because they influence, one's behavior influences what happens in the other. I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know. This made me think of, again, just how do we perceive Harry's culpability with wandless magic? I woke up this morning and listened to Last Week Tonight with John Oliver.
Oh, yeah. I need to watch that. I'm going to watch that tonight.
Yeah. So his latest one was about stand your ground laws and about guns.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay.
And so what was interesting, it was very fascinating, because I understood the notion of, and I can understand the logic of stand your ground, particularly in your own home.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, like, you know, stand your ground has been extended in multiple states, like in the teens or 20 something states, where you can apply stand your ground to any place you have a legal right to be in, even in public.
I didn't know that. I don't like that.
Yeah, like, I thought it was a very, there was a very specific parameter of, like,
yeah,
when it's your own house and someone's right, breaking into your freaking house.
Right.
But apparently that's been extended. And, you know, again, just going to what are all the problems of when you, like, extend it to the public area and all of it is perceived like fear. And of course, what is objectively a reasonable means to use deadly force. And in Harry's case, he is, you know, responding subconsciously. And so, again, the whole sense of culpability of, you know, using, you know, extreme force, but he can't control it. Whereas, you know, again, with people with guns, you know, they'll justify, I feared for my life, blah, blah, blah. But then the reality of, you know, to stand your ground, who benefits from stand your ground laws? White men or women of color?
I think white men definitely benefit.
Well, yeah, because the John Oliver show basically showed the, you know, two instances where a man shot two burglars that weren't even in his own house, were in robbing a neighbor's house.
Oh my goodness.
And even though the 911 dispatcher told him, like, you know, stay in your house, ain't no property worth, you know, shooting over, he still goes out and shoots them in the back and is not charged with anything.
I think I remember this case, because they were, like, teenagers, right?
Yeah, I don't know. And then in comparison, the other case, it was shown that there was a woman who feared for her, a black woman, feared that this guy was going crazy and going to run her over with her daughter. And she didn't even fire the gun. She just waved it threateningly because it wasn't loaded.
Oh, and yet, goodness.
She was the one who was arrested.
Of course.
And even before anything got fixed, she had to spend a year in jail.
Oh, the justice system.
Yeah. Well, I hate to go on a tangent, but again, this notion of thinking of Harry and his subconscious summoning of this magic and how would it be perceived by the authorities, aka the ministry, of would they, that's like, that's appropriate, stand, that falls under the quote unquote stand your ground, like you were, you know, you can't control your emotional reaction or you're in fear of your life or whatever, like, or would they want to punish him?
That's a good, you know, I guess just because now I'm thinking about this in a couple different ways and I'm not making a decision because I'm going in circles, but I guess because we know Harry's intention, it was like he was frustrated and she just would not let go. And he just kind of, you know, I don't think she burst. Like, you don't think he ever wanted to kill her.
No, he just wanted to shut her up.
Right, right. And this was just something, you know, just that happened and he control it. Yeah, I guess if like a, I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't, I'm trying to think through this and I keep contradicting myself in my head because it's like, I don't want to say something comparable to like, I don't know. I'm drifting and confusing myself.
But anyway, so that got me thinking a lot about it specifically when I, you know, watched that John Oliver video.
Absolutely. That makes sense. And just applying those rules into a different world.
That concludes our first ever episode for The Prisoner of Azkaban. Tune in next time and you'll get chapters 3 and 4, The Night Bus and The Leaky Cauldron. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.